Hi everybody, welcome to the next episode of Future Focus CXOs. I have a very special guest today, Carrie Buchanan. She was formerly the Chief Customer Officer at Plural Sites. She has also worked with some of the big brands that we know and admire a lot. She has been with Salesforce for 6 years, Accenture for 20 plus years. Carrie, I'm so excited and wanted to just jump into the customer experience space that you are into. Welcome to the call. Can you please introduce yourself?
Thank you, Jay. It's really fun to do this. I appreciate you reaching out. As I was just telling you a little bit ago, it's really given me a good chance to think about my career and some of the lessons learned. I actually began my career many years ago at Accenture. Actually, at the time, it was Anderson Consulting. And what was interesting is when I first started, I was a programmer. I went through some training when we first came on board and I learned COBOL. And the very first project they put me on was C++, which I'll have to say I was very bad at it. And my manager, I think after a few weeks when he realized that I was probably not going to be a good programmer, moved me over to the customer, and I was working with the customer on user testing. And really, that's where my love for the customer began. So it was a really long time ago, but I spent 20 years there. I was mostly in customer relationship management development within the communications, high tech, and media industries. And then spent several years working with some of the big players like Oracle and SAP and Microsoft. So had a lot of different roles there. And then I moved over to Salesforce. And that was really my introduction into the world of customer success management. I spent 6 years there running a customer success team. And I got to work with some really great customers like Coca-Cola and FedEx and Delta, Home Depot, some of the big companies here in Atlanta, which is where I live now. And then after that, I had an opportunity to move over to one of my customers. And that was a really interesting role because it was more about strategy and operations within the customer success function. So it gave me an opportunity to build some new skills. I had a couple of implementation teams, one around onboarding and one with retention. I got to own the customer escalation process, which is never a fun thing, but was a good experience. And then I started working with some of the customer success applications like Gainsight and of course Salesforce. And then there was a opportunity for me to get back to the global perspective. So I went over to Infor where I ran the global success team there. And I really missed having that global team. I spent time when I was at Accenture living in Argentina and the Philippines and Australia. I really enjoyed getting that bigger, more global perspective. And then most recently, I was Chief Customer Officer at Pluralsight. I had an old colleague of mine from Accenture. Actually, he was the ex-CIO at Salesforce. We connected and I went to work for him. I have had a very busy many years of my career.
Oh, wow. And it has been and very rewarding journey. I definitely want to ask you more onto that. But the first question that comes to my mind is that you have been into customer experience and customer service for a while. If you were to do something differently, how would you do it?
Yeah, it's really interesting. When I was at Pluralsight, I had the opportunity of being on the executive leadership team, which a lot of companies actually don't have their chief customer officers at that level. And it was a really great opportunity because it gave me a completely different perspective of how a company works and how decisions are made. Being in customer success, I was always very focused on that function. And when you get up to the leadership level at a company perspective, you have to start thinking about like the overall metrics of the company and how everyone's job impacts the bottom line. And what's interesting with that is there are a lot of tough decisions. When you're sitting back and you see the leaders make decisions, you're like, oh, I wonder why they decided to do that, or that doesn't seem like a very smart idea. But when you're part of that decision, you come across a lot of really tough decisions that you have to make. And it really makes you think a little bit differently. And so I think for me, when I came into the CCO role, I came in at a time where I felt like I was very focused on the operations and the people. And we had a lot of challenges going on just from an internal perspective. And taking a step back, I think one of the things I would have done differently is really reprioritize my focus and focus more on the critical factors that were actually causing challenges from a customer perspective. And if you think about the CCO role typically has, usually will own the renewal number, right? And so for me, that was really looking at our overall onboarding process. And I actually had our professional services team, our support team, as well as our customer success team. And they all did different things around onboarding. Mm-hmm. And if you think about onboarding, that is probably one of the most important things that you have to get right for your customers. If you don't get them set up correctly in the beginning, you're going to fight that through the whole process.
Oh, yeah. Right? Oh, yeah. So, it is the first impression, right?
Yes. First impression, and it really almost kind of taints the customer's view of you, right? So I really would have spent more time kind of focusing on that than operations is very important. So I would have reprioritized. I think the second thing is that there's a lot of metrics, and I talked about like company-wide metrics and the decisions that need to be made. I would have really spent more time thinking about the metrics that I shared with my peers. So for example, with sales, with product, we had a lot of shared metrics. And it's like, we knew we had the shared metrics, but we didn't really have optimization in place between us and how we are going to really help each other meet the goals. And that means, and this was a lesson learned for me, was that means that I might need to sacrifice some things in my org or in my thinking to maybe help, let's say, sales achieve their goals. So kind of comes down to how do you hold each other accountable for those metrics? And the last thing I would say is that a lot of times when you get up to that level, people don't really understand what your function is or what you're doing. We would have ELT meetings every couple of weeks. You might have one or maybe not even anything on the agenda for that week. I did a really good job of keeping my team up to speed on everything, but I would have done a better job making sure that my peers could really understand what we are doing and maybe celebrating some of that success a little bit more, because a lot of times they just didn't even know what was going on. So that communication piece, I think, is super critical.
Okay, a lot of good insights you gave. You guys definitely went through some difficult times. We seldom talk about difficulties and we seldom talk about failures, and we talk more about success. So the question I have for you is, what strategies did you implement during these times to keep your customers motivated, to keep yourself going, to keep the whole company going?
Yeah, being at a tech company, there is a lot of things going on around layoffs, and a lot of companies are cutting budgets. I was in the tech education space, and obviously education tends to get cut a lot. So there was a lot of stress and pressure put on the business. For me, two things that are super important during difficult times is transparency and communication. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people get a lot of anxiety and angst when they see decisions being made, but they don't understand why. So I got to read a lot of feedback whenever we would have town halls and things like that. And sometimes it'd be like, the perception was the leaders are just up there making decisions and they don't really understand how it impacts everyone, which is, I think, completely opposite of the fact, right? But I think you need to make sure you're very transparent and you have a lot of communication. One of the things that I like to do is these fireside chats where it's very unstructured, right? And I welcome the organization and they can just come and ask me questions. So those were really good times to understand what was on people's mind. There was the restructuring. We went through three rounds of layoffs, which obviously was very difficult. We had some challenges with some security things that happened. But being able to just be very transparent, open, and honest about it, you have to balance. Sometimes there's things you probably don't want to share or you can't share, but balancing that. And then I think the other thing is people really need to understand why things happen. For example, when we had to go through some layoffs, we had to lay off some really great people. And that's really hard. And people don't understand that. I would talk to my team about why we made the decisions that we did to get a better understanding of that. And then I think the last thing is, don't assume that your leadership level is actually communicating the message down to their people. Because I think it's super important that you have a really strong leadership team, because there can be a very big disconnect between an individual contributor and then the leaders. Even my own leadership team, I know some of them struggled with how are they going to deliver this message. So really helping them work through that. At the end of the day, I think it really just comes to communication. I think if people who can understand why decisions were being made, not that they won't necessarily like them, but it eases their anxiety somewhat.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that. You have very good experience managing big teams, small teams, local teams, managing global teams, right? So my question is, what are the differences, similarities between managing a small team versus a big team and managing a local team versus a global team?
The first thing that's super important is having a common vision, mm-hmm. making sure that everyone understands how they fit into what the company does, right? I like to look at the customer journey a lot and mm-hmm. then also look at the segmentation of the customers, right? Where you have big customers or small customers, clearly there are different ways that you are going to address those customers. So one, I think you need to understand what that overall vision is and help people understand how they fit into it. The other thing is it's super important to make people feel their job is just as important as anyone else. For example, customer size. I had teams where one was very hands-on with the customer, right? The CSMs were assigned to that customer and working very closely. And then I also had renewal teams where it was very transactional, right? It was 3 months before a renewal was coming up. They're going to reach out and it's a lot different. Like you're more negotiating the contract and potentially some expansion versus building out this whole plan with a customer. So making sure that people not only understand their roles, but what they're doing is super important as well, right? I always told my teams that had the smaller customers how important their job was, because if you look at my business, a third of our business was those smaller customers, right? Mm-hmm. And if those start to churn, then you could be losing a lot of business versus the bigger ones. So I think making sure everyone feels really good about mm-hmm. what they're doing in their jobs. And then the other thing, what's really interesting, and I think because I've actually lived in other countries and I've seen this perspective, is mm-hmm. that it's not a one size fit all approach. Depending on where your customers are, right? Mm-hmm. You go over to Asia, Australia, ASEAN, and all those countries, it's very different how companies work there. Mm-hmm. And even think about the partner world. You go into some of these smaller countries, you have to rely on partners a lot more than you do maybe in the US. And you also have to think about silly things. One of my leaders in Australia appreciated me so much because I had lived in Australia. So I know time zones. Mm-hmm. are tough, right? Oh, and if yeah. you're always having your town hall call meeting at 10 a.m. on a Wednesday, that's like the middle of the night in other yeah. parts of the world. So how do you make them feel part of it as well? And I will tell you, when I lived in Australia and the Philippines, sometimes I felt like I was on another planet, right? Compared to headquarters in the U.S. So I think you just really have to make sure everyone feels good about what they're doing, why it's important, and then understanding how they work, because not everyone always works the same way. We have some assumptions in the US that everyone wants to be like the US, and that's mm-hmm. actually not very true.
Okay. So I wanted to get into something more detailed with you now. You did mention last time that you were assigned the Coca-Cola account and you managed the Coca-Cola account when you were with Salesforce. That is a big account and a lot of people want to know what goes on managing such a big customer. So tell us how typically such big accounts are managed, harnessed, and grown.
Yeah, a couple things. One, when you do get to some of these big companies, I think the first mm-hmm. and something that I did when I was working with Coca-Cola is that you have to have a really solid communication model in place, right? Because if you think about a company like Coca-Cola, when I was at Salesforce, they had Salesforce in a lot of different countries across the world. And so it was really important to understand who does what, when, and how. And we put together almost like a model framework of who talks to who, when, and who owns what, so that it was very clear. And then we would have steering committee meetings with the executives to work through all of that. I think that was probably one of the most important things. And then the other thing is really looking at the key relationships that you need to have at that company. Mm-hmm. Who's going to be the ones that are going to be big champions for you, or potentially the ones that could cause you problems. When I was at Coca-Cola, one of the executives was a very difficult person to work with, or so people told me right when I was coming on. And for me, one of my main goals was that's the person that I'm going to become mm-hmm. best friends with, right? Like the mm-hmm. hardest person that caused us the most problems. And he and I built such a great relationship together. We still actually talk to each other and get together every once in a while just to catch up, because I came in and the biggest thing for me always is really trying to understand not only the company's objectives and goals, but that individual. Like, how do you help make that person successful? Especially when things don't go well. If you really understand why they're upset or why they're not happy with you, it helps to know how to help resolve those issues. And I think the other thing too, it's hard today because we've gotten very comfortable with the virtual world, but I do think it's super important once you identify who these key people are at these customers, try to build a personal connection with them, go visit them. I mean, even in the past several years with COVID, when we finally started getting out again, it's go meet with your customer, go take them to lunch, get to know them. Because at the end of the day, when things go bad, it's always better when you have that relationship. I'm not saying that it's not going to be a pleasant experience, but you can work through things a lot better when they have that trust for you. So I think it's really just having a plan around that relationship piece of it and how you're going to manage that. And then I think the last thing is just the communication piece of it. When I was a consultant for so long, we had to do status reports. So I've had a hard time letting go of that kind of mentality. But I think when you're at a big customer, it's like communicating all the good stuff that's always going on. And it shouldn't be once a quarter or once every couple quarters when you do an executive business review. It's just celebrating all the good wins and the success, right? And so I used to do this report that I sent out to all the key executives at Coca-Cola around like all the great stuff that was happening, all the things that were going on across the company so that people could see that we were good partners together.
I absolutely resonate. I used to manage a very big account in my past job. There was one very difficult customer. And I used to always travel, go there, sit outside his room for 45 minutes before he used to call me in. And this was very normal. After almost 6 months, I asked him for a lunch meeting and he agreed. And I said, oh, we should have done this earlier. He said very clearly, I could not have come with you earlier. He was that blunt, right? But one day he gives me a call and says, we are going through an RFP. I'm going to give you that, but I want to work with you. So ask me whatever questions. And after we signed the deal, I really asked him, what made you just go with me? And he said, Jayant, you are the only person who really made that efforts to come meet me, made those efforts to understand what I wanted. Many times I was ignored of what I'm really asking for. So I think difficult people are like a coconut, right? They're hard from outside, but they are very soft from inside.
You hit the point that I was making right on the head is around understanding like, how are they going to be successful? Yeah. If they know you have their best interests in mind, then they're going to want to do business with you because they know that you're thinking of it from their perspective and not just you're trying to make a lot of money or you're trying to close a deal or whatever.
Do the stakeholder mapping, saying that who does what, where are they based out of, understand everybody's roles and connect personally with them and then figure out what is going to make them successful. It's easier said than done. These big accounts can be haunting and very confusing at times because there is a lot of reorgs that keep happening every year in these accounts.
Yeah, it is hard. But I'll tell you, when I had told you I went to go work for a customer of mine, I had a really difficult situation with this company back when I was at Salesforce. And because we worked through it and I really got to know the customer, when I decided to leave Salesforce and go to this company, I had reached out to him and I literally, kid you not, within 3 weeks, I had a job there because he put in such a good word because we had such a great relationship together. So you never know, like, especially in today's tech world where even good people are leaving companies, you never know when someone like that's going to be helpful for you. And by really putting in that personal touch, I think goes a long way in building relationships in the work world and outside of the work world.
I want to ask you a very different question, right? Because everybody believes customer success is all about making sure your customer is happy. And it is true at a certain extent, but there are a lot of misconceptions about customer success. And who is better than you to tell us?
I probably have many. I think you alluded to it a little in the question. I think one of the biggest misconceptions is that customer success is the customer success management functions, right? And especially when it comes to renewals, if the CSM doesn't renew it, there's something wrong with the CSM. But to me, customer success is, it's a value, right? It needs to be something that the whole company owns. And I see that a lot where you'll have certain people within an organization who won't talk to a customer. I've heard it within my own team too. That's not my job, that's someone else's job. And I think customer success has got to be company-wide. One of the things I loved about working at Salesforce is they had something called the V2 Mom. I don't know if you've heard of that or not, but it was an annual exercise where everyone It was B2 Mamas. It's vision, value, methods, obstacles, metrics. And basically everyone in the company aligns around the vision and the values. And one of the values was customer success. So everyone in the organization had to say, how was I going to make our customers successful? And then how was I going to get measured on that? And that's something I've tried to bring with me everywhere I went, right? If customer success truly needs to be company-wide, everyone needs to know how they're going to show up for it. For example, if you're a product manager, then you're going to go talk to customers. And a lot of companies do that today. One of the best things we did at Pluralsight when I was there was that I owned our executive relationship program where we assigned the ELT members to different customers. And I assigned all of the executives, including our CFO, who usually is the one saying, nope, you're not going to get any money, or why are we missing our bookings number, our renewal number? We put him in front of the customer. He loved it. And it gave him such a different perspective of what we were going through. And I think it's making sure that head of legal, head of finance, everyone has some sort of role with the customer so that they get that perspective. The second one is that customer success is a cost function. So basically, they're just costing us money. They're not helping drive revenues. And that's why I think there's a big debate now around whether CSM should actually own the renewal, meaning that they actually contractually do the renewal versus sales. But I think regardless, because I've been in both sides of the coin there, is I think it's really important to be able to articulate the value of customer success to metrics and then have people measured on that. For example, back when I was sales first, one of the metrics was how many executive business reviews you did. That's not going to help necessarily generate revenue, but you could be doing business reviews and not actually helping the customer get value out of it. So it's really thinking about what those behaviors you need really help drive that kind of thinking around value and revenue. And then that's what you need to be metriced against it. It's easier when you're, let's say, a CSM and you have a renewal target, you have a GRR target, an NRR target, but when you don't have it, making sure that you still have that is part of your bonus. Like even though you might not get a commission on that, you're still having it. So I think those are probably a couple of the big things. I think it means that people really have to take the time to look at the programs. I've come into companies where their approach was just throw people at it, throw people at it, throw people at it. That's not sustainable after some time. You really got to think about your programs and the systems that you use and the process. Automate data. I cannot tell you how much great data is out there. I'm sure you've seen this, that no one's using. We have all this usage data. Why do we not build programs around that data?
One thing that was there on my mind, I have not run customer success. We might be very off here, but I think one big misconception, there are a lot of escalations from the customer. It is a customer success problem. Many people say that, but I'll say two things about it. One, and I learned it very long time ago from one of our CEOs, and I'm glad he said that to me, saying that customer escalation is not a bad thing. It is actually a good thing. And he said, I'll tell you why. Because if customer is escalating, that means he wants you to improve and he wants to work with you. It's a very good sign. You listen to it and you change. Not hearing from a customer for 6 months is a bad thing. Because guess what? He's searching for options. Yeah. He's done with you.
Yeah.
And the second part is, I think escalations is not really a customer success problem. Right. The root cause is somewhere else, right? It might be in onboarding. It might be in the way the product works. It might be in the way people interact with the customer.
Missed expectations is one I see too, where the customer thought something that was wrong.
Oh, yeah. All the time.
And that's actually a really good point. When I owned the customer escalation process back when I was at Ultimate, one of the things in my job was especially when escalation got to one of our executives, like the CEO, I would come in and talk to the customer, what's going on. And you're right. A lot of times the reason why they were unhappy was because of something, the product or something happened way before it got to the success team. However, I think what's super important is that if you can then address that escalation and then come up with a plan and then work with the customer on that plan, they're usually pretty happy about it, right? And your point, they're bringing it up because they went to your company for a reason. And a lot of times they want the company to be successful, but sometimes they just got to the point where maybe their job's on the line or whatever. One of the things I always tell my teams is you need to practice empathy, right? Really understand where that customer is coming from. Put yourself in their shoes, right? Sometimes they might be right. Sometimes they might be wrong, but really try to see it from their point of view and then work together with that customer to come up with a plan. Sometimes you'll be successful. Most of the times you'll be successful. Sometimes it's just not a good fit customer. I've lost customers. When we go back and look, we're like, I think it's probably a good thing we lost that customer because they're just not the right fit. And I think a lot of times companies don't spend enough time up front to look at what is the customer, ideal profile of the customer. Goes and sells. And then you come to customer success, you're like, this customer might never be successful, whatever the expectations they had, or they might just not be the right fit for the company. And that kind of gets to my point around segmentation, right? And I think profiling, segmentation, to understand like who are your customers and who do you want to sell to? And then making sure that those are the right types of customers. You've probably seen some of the quadrants. There's always that box where it's just let the customers go. Yeah. Healthy attrition, right?
Oh, yeah. But I think you definitely have a very consultative mindset and you bring that passion and that approach to customer success. So all the conventional things we talk about, the metrics we talk about, right? Apart from that, the question really to you, how does this consultative approach that you bring to table really differentiates, helps, and creates a very differentiated customer success for the company wherever you have worked for?
So for me, when I think about that mindset, and I think I had 20 years of brainwashing and consulting very much ingrained in my brain, there's probably like three things I think about, like consultants are really good at, right? One is providing strategic guidance, right? Tell me what I should do. The second is around helping solve problems, right? Customers come to you for a lot of different things. It's not a one-size-fit-all approach, right? So you really got to think about what are they trying to solve? How will it work for them in their world? And then the last piece of it is how can you show value? Consultants, you know, they're pretty expensive, right? And so you got to be able to go back and show that there's value there. And I think the difference is changing somewhat, but I think about traditional customer success. Teams tend to be a little bit more transactional and reactive in nature. And even when they are proactive, it tends to be like, here's some best practices, right? And a lot of times I think success misses the value piece. Although I think you're probably seeing right now, value realization is a big buzzword right now, like coming up in consulting. So I think we're starting to get better at that. But when I get back to the generic best practices, a lot of times we say, here's what all of our customers do, or here's what our best customers do. And a lot of times customers, and I had this one customer back when I was at Salesforce, where we came in and we did this 2-day session and we swooped in all these like experts and they talked about best practices. And one of the VPs sitting in the room said, you guys do this every year. You come in, you tell us all this stuff, but you never tell us what you think we should do. And I think that is what I try to get my people to be more confident about, rather than just saying, here's what all of our customers do. If you know that customer and you know what they're trying to do, what their needs are, their objectives, then come in and you make recommendations on what they need to do. It was funny. So we stopped the meeting. It was like, I don't know, 4 o'clock. We said, okay, you know what? You're right. So we stopped the meeting early. My CSM and I sat there and said, we do know what they should do. They might not like it, but we do know that.
Exactly. Yeah.
So the next day we came in and said, okay, we heard you. This is what we think you need to do. And they all just like stared at us and they're like, we need to go talk about this. So like they all went off in a room and they're like, they're right. And I think that's the thing. We just need to be less about, okay, here's my little agenda and here's what I'm going to cover today. And here's all the new features and functions. It's like really thinking about how you're going to provide guidance.
And I think you said spot on when it comes to consulting experience, because many times customer success leads with saying that this is how you will become successful, Mr. Customer. As a customer, I don't want to hear that. I want to hear, tell me, how will I become successful knowing me?
Yeah. And it really, for me, hit home when I went from Salesforce, when I'm like, oh, we're Salesforce, the birth of CSM, we know success. And then I went to Ultimate after that, and I was like, wow, it's different everywhere you go. It's not the same. Now, you can use some of the same thinking and concepts. Like my approaches have actually been different when I've gone to different companies because the company is different, the culture is different, the customers are different. I think it's good to have the core principles, right? But then my point early about problem solving is how do you then help them solve their problems and provide them guidance in the context of what they're trying to do? So it's not easy to do either, right?
Oh, yeah. So that, I think, leads me to the final question. You have a very exciting journey from being a consultant to being in Salesforce, then being a front-end customer success leading these products, because they're very different perspectives. What advice would you give to people who are aspiring to really become CXOs like yourself?
Yeah, I would say the first thing is look for opportunities to get yourself out of your comfort zone. Or when things come up that you think, oh, I don't know, do it, right? When I was at Accenture, they asked me to take on a sales team. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so bad at sales. I'm a relationship person. I suck at it. But I will tell you, when I did it, and I did it for 2 years, I learned so much. And not that I necessarily enjoyed it. I still like being on the post-sale side, but it gave me such a different perspective of when I go work with sales, right? Like the things that they have to think mm-hmm. about forecasting. That's something I had to spend some time with last year, is like, how do you forecast? And I also think even when you're, let's say, in a role, make sure you spend time with other parts of the business and look at things from their perspective and how they work. I've been seeing a lot of this talk about like how everyone dumps on the CSM and they don't understand us. And I think we need to kind of be the ones to go look and say, okay, do I understand them? Do I understand the pressure that they're under or the things that they have to be doing? So I say volunteer for things. One of the things that I did at Salesforce was they had this early warning system and the data team did it. And I said, I would love to learn about that. So I spent probably 6 or 9 months on this committee, spending a lot of time, which has helped me in my career to think about customer health and data and all those types of things. I think the other thing in success, we tend to be people pleasers, right? We don't ever want to say anything bad and we want to be very collaborative. But I think there are times where you have to not be afraid to ruffle a few feathers. If something doesn't go well, right, you need to call that out to truly be that customer advocate and not only point out those problems, but like, how do you become part of the solution? So really thinking about like, how can you understand that overall customer journey, not just your part of the journey, and then looking for those opportunities. And I think the other thing too, is if you look at the chief customer officer role today, a lot of times they're looking for not only success, but, you know, professional services, renewal support. That's why when I took on that role at Ultimate, it was more of a strategy operations role. And I wasn't customer facing aside from the escalation piece of it, which obviously that's the worst part of it. It makes you really think differently and get a broader view of how things work, right? And really how you need to be more collaborative. And I think the last thing is just learn. I've been spending time thinking about AI, right? Like I probably in my last role really hadn't thought much about it. We were doing other things. Now I've got to think about how could I actually bring that more in? So I'm learning a lot about what does that mean and what does that look like? And I guess the last thing I would say is I know right now I see a lot of people looking for roles out there. And I know my company just went through another round and it's tough, but I think we need to look at it as an opportunity. I was impacted a couple of months ago and I'm looking at how can I like look for new opportunities or how can I really make a difference? That's why when you reached out for this podcast, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is perfect because it's really made me sit down and think about, especially the how could I do things differently or better. I had really spent some time and I'm like, oh, there were definitely some things I could have done better. But I think you're always open to learning. And then I think you see this a lot, but I think this is really true. It is okay to make mistakes, or it is okay not to do something, or something might be a flop or didn't work so well, as long as you can learn from it and then improve on it going forward.
Thank you for sharing so nicely. I've heard from a lot of CXOs I have done podcasts with, very similar thing, saying that this time of 1 hour, the questions you ask us just makes us think of what, how are we doing it and are we doing it right? And because we are so much running on a treadmill that we never get time to see what's around us.
Right? Yeah.
And are we really doing the right job? So thank you for doing that. I love doing this podcast. It gives me a lot of learning, our viewers a lot of learning. So thank you for your time. And any last thoughts before we stop?
I think the last thing I would say is I personally feel being a chief customer officer right now is a very exciting time. We are definitely at this point of thinking differently about customer success and just how it fits in. I think that's just an exciting time, right? We grew up with this very traditional view of what customer success is, and lines are blurring, right? There's a lot of conversation around, especially, does the CSM now sell? Do they expand? All of that stuff. And I would just say for everyone out there, embrace that and put on those creative juices. So I think this is time for us to really rethink with a lot of the new tools and things that are out there. And the end of the day, help our customers be more successful.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you again. Thank you for your time. And I really enjoyed doing this.